Hi there, this is Magnus of The Mind of Magnus, a show dedicated to help expanding the mind that I have in this big skull of mine. I've grown up with the love of factoids and curious about the world, so I'm taking the time to interview all the most amazing people I've met. So join me for The Mind of Magnus. You can find it at magnusapollo.com. And if you have a guest, you want to be a guest, you want to learn more about what's going on in this world, please join me here on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
And we're back with another episode of Beyond the Glass. And I'm your producer, Chris Lindstrom. We're here to talk about an event that has been coming for a while, an event that's taken a lot of work to get to. We're here to talk about Urban Alchemy, which will have their official launch event and artist talk on April 25th at St. John Fisher University at 5:30 to 8:30 at the Joseph S. Scully Welcome Center in the Patricia O'Keefe Ross Gallery. We're here to talk to the two people who have been creatively driving this, Richard Colone, obviously, of Behind the Glass. Hi, Richard.
Hello, hello.
And the one, the only, Magnus Apollo. Magnus, what's going on, man?
Hello, I'm doing great, my gosh.
And I'm really excited to learn more about this process because I've known you guys forever, and seeing you guys collaborate on something that seems to have really captured both of your vibes in one space, but also not just one space. Why don't you jump in and tell me a little about how did this come together?
I mean, we were both approached by a mutual person, Richard Glazer, and I think
shout out Richard. Appreciate you.
He curated in a way. He knew both of us as mutuals and said, you know, that he had a mutual mind of artists that he felt were cohesive in terms of trying to bring together something that Rochester needed in terms of showcasing the love of Rochester. And in our individual, you know, spaces, in terms of what I do, in terms of photography, in terms of street photography, my curation of artists, you know, on a monthly basis, in terms of what I do, and in terms of Magnus and what he does in his visual arts and what he does around Rochester, the blend of both of us together, we both felt that the collaboration was going to be a great show for people to see. So that's where it came together.
Yeah, nothing like being told, like, hey, do you want to do a show with Richard Colone? I'm like, hell yeah, I want to do a show with Richard Colone. That's been my happy thing for the past year working on this project here. So
I was going to say, like, because I know you've done a decent amount of collaborations, Magnus, over time.
Oh, I love collaborations. One of my favorite things is collaborations.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've had some pieces, you know, working with Sean Dunwoody. Recent episode of Behind the Studio Door with Sean Dunwoody just came out, by the way. Great interview. If you want to listen to a full hour talking about Rochester, but that's something that, you know, I know I've seen in a lot of your work is you embrace Rochester in a different way than a lot of people, and that you love details on things that not everybody sees, and you love that, you know, the things that are just beneath the surface or in your imagination just beneath the surface. When you're approaching something like this, where you're coming up with this big cohesive concept, how do you look at that collaboration and find your way to express your stuff and enhancing the other people you're working with?
I think when someone brings excitement and what they want to see to it, that it's easier to work with a collaboration with someone. When Richard and I were first going together, we're trying to like take new photos and do something this way and try to get stuff together and put my pieces in his work and take, you know. And then at one part we realized, I'm like, no, let's go and find the pieces that made, you know, some of his favorite pieces. And I got a chance to learn about Richard, like the balloons pictures that he has in there. I learned about stuff that he was excited about. And having Richard's like little vignettes of Rochester, it always spoke to me so much. And I was just so excited to have my work next to him that it just instantly kept going on that was the excitement. That's really what fueled this whole thing, was excitement to do stuff with him, showcasing City of Rochester. And there was always, that was the focus. It wasn't like, you know, well, my work's here, your work's there, something else. We wanted to have a fun, cohesive flow of a show talking about the love of the city. And we worked with the faculty there, talking to various different instructors and stuff, trying to learn cool facts about Rochester, neat stuff that way, and just trying to learn, I don't know, ways of sharing the city better. So collaboration with Richard is great because we both were excited about our work. We had a chance to show some of his, I mean, these long pano shots he has were just stunning, so you can stare at them. So the collaboration was great because of how easily excited we are about the city we do. So
I think that also the greatest thing that drew us both together to actually want to do this was the fact that we were able to work with students. And I think that's something that was a joy that we both were looking forward to do. The students at St. John Fisher that were part of the project right now, Nicole, Kassan, and the other ones, shout out to them. They were very helpful in fostering the experience and making the project that we've been doing together what it is today. And we're excited to be able to, you know, not only just be able to blend what Magnus and I have been doing together, but to be able to know that we had the support and the help with them. And they're actually working on a documentary because they were also documenting what, you know, Magnus and I were doing in the process, which was pretty awesome as well. So
it's always fun working with the kids too. There's an excitement there, and it was neat. It's such a wonderful place. You should turn that camp. People following along on your social should see, you know, this guy here too.
That's why I had it like that. And then
I know what you're trying to
put it over a little farther that, to the right. Yeah. So those who want to follow along, Richard B. Cologne on social media is right there.
Yeah.
Look at this.
So what I'm kind of interested in, Richard. So when you're talking about integrating, you know, when you're working with students and you're integrating your own work, how do you see, you know, when you're trying to think of how to, you know, formulate something like this? What's the grounding element? Is the photography the grounding element? Is it the concept that's the grounding element? How do you see when you're building something like this? What grabs first, and then you're building around that thing?
Right. So I think the main concept we had was basically what Urban Alchemy was. So we're trying to showcase, you know, what our love of Rochester is. So there's lots of places that we usually would frequent a lot of times. And, you know, in my case, when I'm, you know, shooting the different things in Rochester in terms of my street photography, there's, you know, the water towers. There's certain places downtown that I would, you know, frequent and whatnot, and document and showcase. And so I worked my way around trying to pivot a theme of the places that I always frequented that people often see, but also try and give them an element that is my vantage that they may have not have seen before. Mm. So that's kind of like what I tried to bring to the gallery so that they can get a new aspect, new vantage, and try and be able to be surprised in a way when they see it. And then also we, you know, included different facts and different things about Rochester so that, you know, including with these photographs that they have, they actually can, you know, get some stories behind why, you know, we took these pictures.
So when you're talking about, you know, student influence, were they helping, you know, construct the space and build the experience, or is it work, or how is it working with the students, and what were they contributing to the process?
I mean, they were down to help. They if you need anything, they'd do it. They helped us kind of walk through some ideas and stuff. They liked being little further back and kind of documenting what's going on. They didn't want to get in the way of us, which is funny for us because I would love to have students work with me. So, they did come out and help a little bit for setups, and we kind of bounced some ideas around, but they were really more having fun being in the background, watching all of us just have, you know, chaotic art happening.
So. Yeah. And I think it's kind of a special thing. You know, it's, you know, when you're learning about who you are, you're in college, you're trying to figure things out. Mm-hmm. It's got to be kind of a valuable experience to, you know, see people who they might know as artists or have followed them, or hey, seeing them for the first time and seeing that, yeah, it's still a process, that you're still working through stuff, that you're figuring out how to create something like this, that it's not, you know, it isn't just, you know, discovered in full cloth, ready to go.
Right.
That it's a process of learning. It's a process of growing something like this. Mm-hmm. Like, that's got to kind of be an interesting topic to talk about with them as well.
Oh, yeah. We've had, you know, we still have to, as of yesterday, we've had weekly meetings, you know, where we're going over different things that, you know, what works and what didn't work, you know, what can we change, what needs to be done, what still needs to be done, what did we complete, what needs to be, you know, different for next time, how can the gallery be, you know, different. And a lot of these students are in these meetings with, you know, us as professionals trying to brainstorm and figure things out. So they see that. They see that mending of the minds, and they see the brainstorming, and they see how things work. And it's beneficial for them so that when they, you know, continue their journey into their professional life, they can see how things work and how they can implement that, you know, moving forward as well.
For sure. And it's, you know, having this on campus has to be kind of interesting too, because you're really showcasing your view of Rochester. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Magnus bringing some of your whimsy, but also enhancing, you know, those spots with your characters and with other things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful beard too. Oh, you got it braided too.
I have to. It's getting too crazy. Yeah, those it's getting braided. Too big, fuzzy. So,
are you gonna double braid it for the show?
No. Naturally wants to go double anyway. I try to pull it together. That's the trouble. It wants to split into two, like I'm some sort of Viking like sidekick. So, yeah, I try to pull it into one. No, but the show the show's different. This one, I have some of my large pieces which are fun. Actually, I was just talking to the dean today, going to put one around the campus to raise some awareness, and I have some other birds to put around the city here. Mm-hmm. We did those golden frames, which was a neat idea that I really like. I want to try to do more of those. So I put a frame up in the gallery. I put a frame up over in the cafeteria. What do you want to lack a better term for it there? Mm-hmm. We also did a frame. These are blank golden frames, 4-foot by 4-foot frames that have golden trim to them, but they're blank on the inside. And I attached markers and stuff to them. So there is an illustration. There's one on Mike Delaria's at the public market.
Shout out to Mike Delaria.
Oh, my God. He's so great. And we did one for First Friday because I wanted to see what the conversations were happening. So yep. I made a canvas. It's just a blank canvas for people to draw on, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's in the gallery show as well. So there's a conversation that's happening. I wanted to see what the conversation would be different between an on-campus versus in the city and versus that stuff around there.
Well, but I also love that, too, because that's kind of the fundamental thing about the show is that it is, you know, it's grounded on being on campus. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the topic is really, what is it like to be somewhere? What is it like to really live somewhere?
Yeah, I wanted
somewhere.
People to, yep, I wanted right. people to be aware. I want the students to know Rochester is only a handful of miles away. Go check it out. So that was really one of the fun things I worked on. And also part of the show I did too, which is in the zine we worked on, was I did my factoids. I love my random factoids about Rochester. And some of the facts I put in there are not necessarily the most happiest facts, but they're facts I think people should be aware of. Like,
correct.
We had one that's about the bodies at the Highland Park that got found and that got reinterned. But because we had Ryan, I think I have his name right now, last name, but one of the professors there, he actually gave a tour, gave us a talk, and actually came out and joined to inform us more about the stories and facts. So I gladly would do more stuff that way.
Yeah, so. talk about, you know, before we go to break, let's talk about zines for a second, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's what a resurgence. You know, it was the kind of thing I remember, like, in college, like in beginning of college, you know, this was, we had the internet, but it mm-hmm. wasn't, not everybody was even on yet. Mm-hmm. And zines were this thing that were, you could do it cheap. You could put something out where you could be visible.
Right.
And there's something about that attitude that is going around right now where people are finding this as a really interesting form of communicating their thoughts, both visually and written.
That's a tangible thing too. We got so far down the internet rabbit hole of intangibility that I think people are now realizing that stuff from 10 years ago doesn't exist anymore. Things that work they may have done was like, oh, that was on my Facebook page or a MySpace page or whatever it may have been. Who knows? So there's a bit of a tangibility that you have a zine now. You can actually see it, show it. And I'm an old print guy. I love having print work. So having a zine, having a zine with Richard is super excited. I think it turned out really darn cool. It's a fun layout. So, you know, it's not a normal size zine, which I thought was also one of my favorite parts about this.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of that going around the community right now, too. I saw, you know, Vivian Rivers from Behind the Glass just mm-hmm. had a zine out.
Yeah.
For her show that was, you know, behind the scenes in the restaurant, and, you know, the hospitality industry, back of house. I've got it on the table. And, you know, it's got to be really interesting to see other people doing that stuff and showing their work in a different way.
Right.
You know, and expanding on, hey, maybe you've done the gallery. Hey, let's, you're trying something different now too.
Right. In a way, it's a neat way to metaphorically take a gallery and, you know, compartmentalize.
Wow.
There you go. Compartmentalize.
I didn't know if you were trying to say carpe diem.
Same. I wasn't sure. The carpe diem. Take that thing. Wow.
You got to carpe the diem. Wow. Put the things in a book and bring it with you.
Former ELA teacher here. Wow. Yes. You're literally taking it and packaging it into like a little paper, like paper format that people can take anywhere they want. And like, they can look at it and they can show it to other people. And it's amazing because it's almost like a stamp of that artist's work. And it's there for, you know, as long as they have it. And it's amazing. I released a zine a couple years ago, and actually I don't even have my own copy of my own zine. I have to reprint it again, but cause my last copy I actually gave to my mother. But I mean, it's amazing to be able to see that in like a little small magazine format. And yeah, it's getting hot right now, and a lot of people are doing it, and I encourage it. It's great. If you can't, you know, be in a gallery and you can't, you know, sell prints, a zine is a great way to showcase your work in a format and that's packaged. And yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be giving some away when you come to the show April 25th. We have that. I also did a sticker sheet. There was like a 4x6 with the crows on it and some other cool facts and stuff.
That's another great way of, you know, trying something out when it comes to merchandise is, you know, paper sticker sheets. You can buy them so cheap.
Right.
You know, making some stickers, trying something out, make some buttons, make some stickers. You know, if you've got an idea, just kind of go for it. You know, try something out, make a zine, make a sticker sheet, make something that you want to show something. So while you're thinking about that, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy, and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. And we're back from the break. We've compartmentalized all of the ads in our brain.
Sure did.
We have embraced them to their
compartmentalized.
Maximum.
Compartmentalized. I would be myself. There we go.
We've embraced it completely. And I kind of wanted to come back with talking about crows for a second. Mm. So something that I know you've been so deep into, Magnus.
Deep inside the crows.
Deep inside. Whoa,
yeah.
Deep inside.
It's like a turducken of sorts, I guess, right? Yeah.
It does sound like a bit of it's like an alternative 90s song.
Yeah.
Deep inside the crows.
Yeah.
I know it's something that's kind of fascinated you for a long time, and I'm really happy you got to create some of these things and bring it into this Rochester experience. I mean, so one, Richard, talk to about how it looks for a second.
Oh my gosh.
And then I kind of want to learn more about, you know, your passion about it.
What's crazy is that every time I show, like I showcase any part of the gallery, like in like a video, like walk around or like a image still of the gallery, the first like reply in my story is, holy shit, those crows. What about the crows? What's going on? Or they'll say the birds, and I gotta say, hold up, wait, it's not a bird, it's a crow. But no, it's amazing because number one, they're larger than life. And it literally screams Magnus, which is amazing. But second, it's something that is amazing because with somebody like him that if you don't listen to the mind of Magnus, you don't learn. So with him, he teaches you so many different things. So being a great friend with Magnus has a lot of perks because you learn so much. Shout out to Magnus, Mind of Magnus, and the Podcast Network.
Great show on the Lunch and Hour Podcast Network.
Oh, for sure. I love it, love it. But yeah, no, so like in the process of, you know, this, you know, creation of the Crows, I got to learn, you know, different things and different, you know, ideas behind why we were implementing them into the whole process of Rochester and why they're so important. And so him learning that he was actually working with the Seneca Park Zoo, recording them and doing all that whole process before the even, before our show was even, you know, put into, you know, on paper, it was just amazing. And I was so happy that we were able to, you know, dovetail it or crowtail it into into our gallery.
Yeah, the Seneca Park Zoo, I actually worked with them. I used things called audio moths, these little audio capturing devices. And the reason we did it, well, first they were trying to learn how to use them better. So I was using myself a bit as the lab rat for them. We use the audio to capture stuff. I'm helping them kind of reforest Madagascar, and they're doing some document stuff of Madagascar. So they're working with them as well. So we spent a handful of days. We did about 24 hours of recording, technically, to get the one we want, of various audio recapturing devices all around the city. So we actually made a surround sound of 15,000 crows either flying over my building or landing at right near the baseball stadium. And in the trees, they landed there. 15,000 all come crashing down into there. Right. And the cool thing was is we used that audio capturing, and then come the eclipse, they used all that same tech, and they knew how to do it better. Mm-hmm. So they used the audio capture to capture all the sounds of the animals for the eclipse that just recently happened, too. So it was pretty darn cool.
So that same audio, though, is the audio that's used downtown, correct?
No,
some of the it's a different audio.
No, the audio they have downtown is actually the predator. It's actually birds like falcons and hawks and stuff to scare them away. They're the guy's going to eat the crows. That's the sound that's happening.
Because at the Mercantile on Main for Behind the Glass Gallery, while we're setting up really late, it sounded like crows were being murdered.
Oh,
no
really?
Pun intended. Like really late at like 10:30 at night, they had that plane up there, and it was a different sound, but. As you can, we can, you know, actually now tie that into what we'll have as audio inside the gallery.
Yeah. So actually, I built a little small audio box. So I actually can have either an hour of ambient crow sounds or 10 minutes of cacophony, we would jokingly call it. So, yeah. So it's 15,000 crows all coming in. So I made a little audio box. So as you're standing looking at these giant crows, I made this device that is broadcasting the sounds of the crows playing, and everyone's getting a blast out of that. So,
insane.
Yeah. So, yeah, we did a bunch of audio recapture with them. And we documented it. Actually, we had some sound effects. We sent it to some bird specialists to hear what's going on because there's sounds. They're like, that's all crows? I'm like, yeah, there was only 15,000 crows in these trees. There's nothing else hanging out there. So.
Only.
Yeah. But yeah, so the crows I did, they're all between just shy of, you know, they fit on a sheet of 4 foot by 8 foot. So whatever that may be. So they're about 8 feet wide. And all different just fun illustrations I've done. And been trying to put them around Rochester, too. I've been doing smaller versions of those around the city. I did a whole small smattering of those as well. I gave a bunch to the students to give out and hang up there as well. And so I'm giving some of those out as well as the show, too. So much little small ones. So people are going to kick out of the crows. Yeah, the crows are a neat thing. They are the city spends a small fortune every year to try to shuffle these crows away from things that are important. And I understand. I mean, birds, they crap everywhere and that sort of things. But the thing is, you can't steer 15,000 items. You know, they're very smart animals. So I've been trying to work with them for the past five years, just kind of see what they're doing and learning about them. I've been feeding them, trying to make them leave.
I was going to say, there was a time I went to Magnus's studio and we were doing just a walk down to the gorge, right? And mm-hmm. we were behind his studio and we're back there. Well, I forgot how I was brought up, but you were telling me that you were leaving stuff for the mm-hmm. crows back there. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, I've been slowly feeding them for the past 5 years, but I also been training them to bring me shiny objects.
Right.
And the idea is, so they've actually paid for their own meal already. They did it once. They actually leave money for us. So on
amazing.
Right near the gorge, there's random like quarters, coins. Also, the very specific thing from a bottle they love bringing me. It's an alcohol bottle. Yeah. But yeah, I've actually been for about 4 or 5 years. Yeah. I've been slowly training them just to see what happens. And there's on the rocks, there'll be the random coins, quarters. I use peanuts as training tools for them, everything else.
They're very smart.
Yeah.
I had a friend, she used to leave food out in her driveway for the crows, and they would come every day. She would pull in her driveway.
I had a plan around them because I didn't want them to learn where my door was. Because they start one time they landed on the roof and they started all hanging out on the building, mm-hmm. and I was like, uh oh, because they're like they start like tapping on the roof, like, hey, yeah, I need some peanuts now. Right. So I had to like, mm-hmm. I had to like know when they're showing up, and they're oddly like pretty good about being exactly on time. So I had to like walk out the front of the building, sneak around, and put stuff around for them. So yeah, so we did crows. We have golden frames, awesome photos. Your poetry, by the way, too, is on there.
You actually... wait, real quick on crows. Didn't you confirm, Chris, that you were going to dress up as Brandon Lee the crow for our reception? Right.
See, that's where the confusion comes in. I'm not dressing up as the crow from the movie.
Right.
I'm dressing up as Sting. Dressing up as
Sting. Gotcha.
In the style of the crow. So gotcha. This is more like late era WCW Sting. All right, cool.
And then you just stay in the Raptors and just stare at people?
Yeah, with a black baseball bat. Perfect. And then occasionally I'll make noises. And yeah, if you put a shiny thing out, I'm grabbing it.
There
perfect,
you go.
Perfect.
Perfect. All right, cool.
So bring your shiny things to the show on April 25th.
Chris loves shiny things.
I love it.
That's also so you, though. Like, I love the fact that, like, you know, something that other people are seeing as a menace, that you just love diving into the minutiae and the details. Mm-hmm. And seeing what is so cool and unique about, you know, these creatures that live in these huge communities. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they all just show up, which is crazy. I actually brought the director for the Seneca Park Zoo, Pamela, and some other folks down, and at the audio capturing, having them all show up, and they're landing in the trees we're standing next to. So watching 15,000 just birds coming in at just these waves, they're not even like organized, just this mass that just keeps coming in. And it is an experience. And I have a bunch of videos of it on my socials. You can find it on some of my stories and stuff on my Magnus Apollo on Instagram. But it was a neat experience. And one person came over and they were like kind of moved by it. They're like, I didn't expect this to be this intense and this crazy to watch all these just animals coming in. So pretty neat to see. So little details. I love those things.
That's awesome.
Weird factoids.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking about now integrating, you know, audio. You're talking about now integrating poetry as well. So you're talking audio. You're talking, you know, some animated, you know, animated style things that you're bringing, photography, and now poetry too. Like, this really is, when we're talking about multidisciplinary art,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what this whole experience is bringing all this stuff together.
Right. Yeah. So as we're putting together the show and we're putting, you know, things together and trying to make it, you know, look great inside the gallery, you know, I had a series of portraits of balloons that I had found, you know, scattered throughout Rochester. And as I was, you know, displaying them, you know, together, and I had them all printed out, I was like, you know, they look great, you know, as a set, because they're going to be, you know, as a set somewhere inside the gallery. I kind of felt like, you know, they needed something else to kind of drive them. And so, you know, I was like, you know what? There are stories behind these pieces. You know, there's reasons why these balloons were left on the street. There's reasons why they were here before they got there. You know, I didn't just place them there. I found them there, took the picture. They were abstract, and that's basically how I got them. So, you know, my background, I used to do, you know, poetry in the back of the day. So in the back of the day, back when I used to, you know, do ELA a lot of times, you know, with my students, I used to do some poetry. We used to do like poetry slams and whatnot. And so I developed a poetry that was, you know, themed around, you know, balloons in Rochester and street. And, you know, I displayed it in the middle of those three portraits. I got some balloons that were tattered and blew them up and just pasted them near the set of portraits and the poetry, and I displayed them in the gallery. So they'll be up there as well.
It's a great flow through. The poem's amazing. And I really enjoy trying to make a experience when you walk in. Richard will understand this. When I was setting it up, I was like literally pacing through the floor, watching like, okay, your eyes are going to go this way and going around here. Mm-hmm. So he has his poetry. When you walk in on the back side of these small walls, where's the text lives. So when you walk in, it's a visual, just kind of beautiful thing flowing through these long horizontal pieces. And then as you come around the edge, you can stop and read these wonderful things. Both, all the text is on two sides of the same, two different panels on the same, facing the same way. So we can kind of take it in looking one direction that way. So either my random small factoids and his poem. So it's designed as you flow through, there's actually a kind of a pace that I feel you'll have as you walk through with kind of long shots, text, read along. Then these giant crows in the background, you can stare at behind it. So mm-hmm. it's a full experience. I like to try to set it up that how the eye flows and the flow of people and their attention is a big thing for me when I'm making gallery shows.
Yeah, so like I love that we've covered a lot of different aspects of what this experience is. And just a reminder, if you want to plan on going to the reception, which, like, if you want to be around a lot of people seeing this, reception is on Thursday, April 25th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at St. John Fisher in the Patricia O'Keefe Ross Gallery in the Joseph Scalney Welcome Center. I know I'll be there. We'll probably be recording live as well.
Will you be there?
I think so. I think I'm going to try to make some time to go.
I'm going to try and be there, too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to bring as many people as I can for this. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm trying to be there.
Yeah, so what I did want to finish off with is, you know, like we talked all about those things. We're talking about the event and how people are going to experience it. But I want to talk about the work for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about all this, you know, experience stuff and looking at eye lines and thinking about the flow and then combining visuals and written and, you know, the whimsy and everything else. I want to talk about the work because trying to figure out the experience that other people are going to do is a kind of work that I don't think people understand nearly as much. So I know, like, you know, with Behind the Glass and all the things that you do, Magnus, you know, the experience is about just considering the one thing, maybe put it at your house, but this is this multimedia thing going on. How do you go through that process together and with everybody else to, you know, ground it and then keep on refining it over time? Because that's how you end up with something really special. It's not just a one shot.
I think Richard had a lot of faith in me when I'm good visually stuff. Like I'm a visually minded person. Like I have rolled all my stats for visual. I'm horrible with music. I can barely play the radio, you know? And so I was describing what I wanted to see and he was very much like, yeah, that's great. And then it was he's a solid sounding board. I'll talk about things that I feel were, you know, needed. And then when we're in the gallery, he was watching me just walking around, staring off at like a buffoon sometimes, just like looking. And I take myself away from me and I put myself as a person walking in for the first time. Your head's going to turn to the left. It's going to be bright gold. I want gold here because I want that attention. I want to pull to the left. And then I want to have Richard's long, amazing photography pull you through into the gallery. So when I did this, this is how my brain works. Every time I work in a gallery show, anytime I do any sort of event, I put myself as the first time walking in. Where's your steps going to go? And it's like the birds, like the big birds, they're not the biggest things. They're actually around the corner on the right. So when you walk in, it's one of the last things you see is one of the largest pieces. And that actually spills from the wall all the way around through the windows and everything else too. So my thread when making something is putting it into the first person's view, not know what you're expect. I wanted to have, and I mean, I wanted to have even bigger, better things. Don't get me wrong. I wanted to have, like, I could have painted the ceiling. I was told at one part. So I was like, yeah, I could do this too. My gosh. But yeah, I think Richard is he had a lot of faith in my weird, like, I'm going to try this. And like, he'd just nod and smile being like, I think this guy maybe know what he's talking about. Sure. We'll see how it goes. And so
yeah. It's gotta be interesting from your side seeing that too, because it's not necessarily how you go through things.
I mean, it's not, I mean, I'm so used to, I mean, for example, like when I'm curating Behind the Glass, it's so plain Jane in terms of the space, right? So these artists, their work alone is what the canvas is, right? So like we have this whole gallery where we literally kind of had free range in a way. You know, we were limited to some things. Like you said, we couldn't paint the ceiling. I kind of wanted to. But, you know, we couldn't do that. So it's kind of like, you know, watching somebody that has, in a way, no filter in terms of where their artistic expression is going to be at. So just letting him take the wheel. It wasn't like I was a backseat driver. It was more like I was in the front seat with him and just going along for the ride and just trusting and, you know, and it was enjoyable. It was great because we both had an idea of where we wanted to go. The route and the scenes that I saw on the way there were amazing.
Oh, metaphorically. It was a No, it was a fun ride. Because we had one of the, my favorite pieces we have in the show is actually I did a large piece, and then Richard and I went and took a picture. He took a photo of my piece up at the water towers.
Ah, yes.
And that piece is actually there too. So hopefully people come take pictures. There's large stuff, so take pictures with it, tag it. I want to see around there as well. But one of my favorite things is we got a chance to kind of emerge. So there's a little bit of a Venn diagram of my piece and his piece together. Mm-hmm. And when we were making this thing laid out,
we
wanted to
cross the streams.
We did cross the streams. And it was, I wanted to actually do more of that. But I feel like now that we're in a spot now, I love how the piece is. There's this little bit of a kind of a, like the big mesh over here and mesh over there. There's a perfect little that Venn diagram overlap of his eye. And I think it's one of my favorite pieces in the whole thing is this kind of fun mash together. So
yeah, I love it too. It was great. I mean, we were, and the story behind that was we were up at the water towers taking those pictures with the students as well, which was great. So we were able to have that experience and it was awesome.
And Kwaje was there. Shout out to him because he took the photo of us. That's also, he's part of the show too. His photograph of us is on there. It's overlooking the
city. Part of the zine too. He actually did our forward, right? Mm-hmm. In the zine. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like guys on, one, I'm really proud of both of you for coming up with this and working together, coming up with something that's greater than what you can do individually is the best thing you can hope for, a real collaboration. And that's what this is. This is a real collaboration between two of my favorite people in Rochester. So one, congratulations, Richard. Congratulations, Magnus, for finishing something that is really cool. And something that you're going to want to come and experience. So, guys, why don't you tell them again, where can they go see the work now at the gallery? And when can they come out for the big launch event?
Yeah, sure. It's at the Patricia O'Keefe Gallery over at St. John Fisher College over on East Avenue, I think. I don't know the exact address, but...
Just off the 31F exit, Fairport Road.
There it is, Fairport Road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the furthest driveway. If you're getting a 31F, it's actually the last driveway, the furthest west of the campus is that way. So
yeah, it's very easy and accessible to get to once you park. There's a little parking lot right in front of it, so the parking is very easy there. You can go right in, and the gallery will be right on your right side as you
walk. It's open now. You want to check it out. If you're nervous about, like, I know we're still, and like a lot of people nervous about crowds and stuff, but if you want to go in, it's a great, it's a wonderful experience just being there by yourself right now too. So if you want to get in there.
Eight 8:30 to 4. Monday through Friday, the gallery hours are open when the Welcome Center is open. But if you want to get the great experience of meeting us and
artist talks,
networking
too.
With people and, having a good time to, just hang out with us at the reception. That is April 25th, 2 weeks from the day that we're recording this today, from 5:30 to 8:30. And unofficially, we'll be probably hanging out at Barb at Ending, so please come hang out with us afterwards.
Love that. Well, guys, again, congratulations. So happy we got to chat about it on Beyond the Glass.
Yeah, follow the hashtag Urban Alchemy Rock, ROC, on all of our socials to follow that along. There's going to be some other stuff floating around too, crows and stuff. So if you take pictures and tag us, make sure Urban Alchemy ROC Rock.
Correct.
That's awesome. Yeah, and you can follow Magnus at Magnus Apollo on Instagram. Follow and subscribe to the Mind of Magnus podcast on the Lunchador Podcast Network. Show up for the end of the month gallery at Behind the Glass at the Mercantile on Main. Boys, thank you so much for coming over, and I will see everybody at the Urban Alchemy launch event on April 25th.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Urban Alchemy, from the windows to the wall!
Compartmentalize.